My name is Dr. Michael Yeadon. I'm 60. I have a degree in PhD, degree in biochemistry and toxicology, pharmacology, it was respiratory pharmacology. And I've worked for 32 years in a mixture of big pharmaceutical companies. I was at my most senior vice president of respiratory research at Pfizer. And then for the last 10 years, I've been an independent, both advising several dozen biotech startup companies. And for 6 years, I founded, ran and sold my own biotech. So that's me. So I'm broadly experienced in sort of bio-led biological sciences. And I would say I do know a lot about immunology, inflammation, allergy, things like that.
I mean, how did you get into this as a young man, Mike? You know, what was it that made you take this career path, do you think?
My dad was a doctor, probably helped. I'd always been interested in science. I also like machinery, even now, old motorbikes. So I like the mystery of trying to work out how things work, why they sometimes don't, when it's broken, what's gone wrong, what can we do to fix that? And when you fix it, what are the consequences? So that really describes drug discovery. It's exactly the same mental approach as trying to fix an old mechanism. And I've been probably playing with that since I was old enough to stand up and dismantle my grandfather's clocks, which I didn't manage to reassemble them, but there you go. So that's really just a sort of an attitude of mine to problem. I like problem setting, problem solving that are practical whilst thinking about the big picture.
We're in the situation now where, I mean, I certainly look at the TV as a former full-time professional broadcast journalist, and now I'm freelance. But looking at the television, it looks to me as if there's a real attempt to sell these vaccines using news bulletins. And I'm not seeing the downside, because everyone that thinks about it knows that some people, for example, are simply going to get ill if they have vaccines, you know, that they've had adverse reactions in the past, this sort of thing. And yet it does seem to be a bit of a hard sell. So why so much pressure, do you think?
One, I will say, I mean, I hear about it secondhand, but I personally, after 42 years of listening to BBC Radio 4, every opportunity I could, like a loyal middle class, white collar professional, I tore myself away about October last year, and I've never turned the TV or mainstream radio on ever again. And the reason I did that is I determined that almost everything they were telling me was verifiably lies. Okay? Seriously, it wasn't just they were a little bit wrong. And I just thought, I can't stand this anymore. If you're talking about, they were talking about health and disease and treatments and the prevalence of infectious diseases. And I assure you, I spent very little time doing anything but reading into this area for about the last probably almost a year. And I read a lot. I'm a voracious scientific reader. That's how I was able to be good at my job. So I know much more than the broadcasters do. And I'm sick and tired of them telling me things that are verifiably untrue.
Well, that's a very strong word to use, lie. Can you just give us a couple of examples of something that you heard and explain why you believe it's untrue?
I'd probably go and have to go back and find examples. But certainly things like, they often would be telling us things like, you know, the virus is very prevalent, you know, sort of very high numbers of cases. But, and you'll probably be hearing that now. You know, at the moment, they'll probably be telling you we're locked down because there's lots of cases. Let me give you their own statistic. 1.9 million tests were done on school children, mostly of key workers over the last, I think it's 3 or 4 weeks. They haven't found any genuine cases of COVID. Now, that's pretty important to me. So don't give me this lies about how the country is awash with COVID. I personally don't think there's any prevalence of COVID at all in the ambulatory community. And as a result, I don't understand why the people who have obtained those screening results are not saying, excuse me, Witty, Valance and Johnson, why are you still destroying the economy and the mental health of people over a virus that most people have either been vaccinated against or already immune or got immune because they were infected? It's just completely monstrously disproportionate what's going on. And that's an example. You're told that you're at risk of catching and dying from it now. That may have been true a year ago. I'm sure that it was a greater risk then, but it's not now. Now, even the US Centers of Disease Control, CDC, they estimate something like 25% of their population have been infected over the last 12 months. There are at least a dozen, probably more, peer-reviewed journal articles that show that about 30% of the population had prior immunity to the virus before it even arrived. So I reckon that gives us 55 to 60% immunity without the vaccines. And then we immunized over 50% of the adult population, and that would be like in excess of 90% of the vulnerable. Who the hell is it that a senior official or the audience thinks is really vulnerable? Get off your knees and tell them you're not putting up with this anymore.
Well, yes, Mike, and or the House of Commons. We've just had today the renewal of the legislation. It's almost gone through on the nod without even hardly a proper debate. That this legislation, which is stripping us of many of our civil liberties on Tuesday night, the police went in and actually, with riot police, and destroyed a demonstration, which was a perfectly peaceful demonstration of 200 people. They were socially distanced, they were wearing masks, etc., and yet they were attacked by the riot police because, as the Chief Constable Andy Marsh said, he said, well, this is these are the COVID restrictions. I'm sorry, you're not allowed to do this.
Well done, boys in blue. If you're all listening, I hope you're very proud of yourself and you're destroying the world, not just for your peers and your retired parents, with the children and grandchildren. Well done, you idiots. Start looking around you and realize you are being used by, I don't know who's doing this, but it's clearly what we're being told is a lie. It's not for me to work out who's causing the crime. I'm often told, well, if it isn't what we're being told, what is it for? I don't know. I'm not a bloody policeman. I'm able to tell you that what you're being told is not true. I'm a scientist. I can tell you that what you're being told is not true. And here's like 18 different references that show it's simply not possible. And if you then want to go along with it's a childlike fantasy that you have to cover your faces and run away and do what we're told and then wait until we tell you can come out of the corner. That's pretty much we're being treated like children. And it seems to me 99% of the people, maybe more, unfortunately, are just willing to go along with it. I just don't understand it. I do think often people feel a sense of embarrassment if they realise, say, that a senior person has made a mistake. You imagine you're at work and a senior person has said something and you know it's not true. You don't want to shout this out because, if you're wrong, you're going to look really stupid. Second, if you're right, you're going to embarrass them so badly that you think, I'll just be a decent person, just say nothing. And I think there's quite a lot of that going on. And I've spoken to about 8 UK university professors whose qualifications cover immunology. And we've talked about, my favourite hobby horse at the moment is immune escape. Is it really true that by vaccinating while the virus is still around, you could induce resistance, as it were, immune escape? And they all agree that it's pretty unlikely. But we're being told that variants of this virus are a serious hazard, so serious that we need to close the international borders effectively for the first time in history of this nation in case one of them gets in. I mean, it really is Monsters, Inc. time. And furthermore, we need to have top-up vaccines to give us immunity to something that's 0.3% different than the last virus. I mean, just give me strength. And when I've agreed with these people, I said, so you agree that this is just kind of not right, what we're being told? They go, yeah, that's true. I said, so when are you going to stand up and say something? And they're not. They're not. They would agree with me privately, won't say anything because they will upset the university administration, or they feel they won't get grants from certain grant funding bodies, which are very important to university finance. And they literally turn their face away from me. And okay, that's fine. So when I speak, Tony, and people who are listening to me hearing I'm very cross, because I am cross. I am not the only one who thinks like this, but I'm one of the few who's prepared to say it, probably because I'm not a very fearful person. I don't care. And secondly, because I'm not employed There isn't someone who can come to my office and say, you better shut up, Mike, otherwise...
I could say exactly the same for journalists, Mike, actually. There's thousands of journalists out there who are not having their voice because they want to keep their jobs. But we've had this coronavirus legislation go through again today. If you had your 2 minutes on the floor of the House of Commons, what points would you be making to the members of Parliament, Mike, to say, actually, we don't really need to have this legislation renewed? And I'd be just interested to hear, are there any key facts you think that you think people should be paying attention to?
Yes, I would say the hazard of this virus, you know, that is its lethality, is much, much, much less than we thought it was when we stood here a year ago and you locked us down. We've learnt that it pretty much only is a threat to the health and kills occasionally people who are very close to end of life. The average age at death of people with COVID has been actually slightly older than the average age at death from all other causes in this country. That must give you pause for thought. It's not taking from us, you know, our young and healthy people the way something like polio might, or, you know, other serious infectious diseases. So it's a disease which at most hastens the end of people who are close to or right at the end of life. And therefore, I think now we have provided vaccine protection for every single one of those people who wants it. And we don't need any additional measures at all. And we should this very day announce, you know, Freedom Day and remove masks, every single measure. And by the way, the ONS and Public Health England data actually says the incidence of the virus in the general population, 1.9 million tests I just mentioned, we're not able to find it. So take care out there, folks, and sorry about the last year. Get on with it.
There is, as I said, quite a lot of pressure for people to have a vaccine. I mean, these are complicated issues that most of us that are not epidemiologists, immunologists, really can't make our own mind up about as individuals. We're getting texts, we're getting letters saying, come for your vaccine, it's all ready for you. What would you say to anybody who was considering, well, I'm not sure, this seems like a bit of a hard sell to me, should I do it or not?
Yeah, if you give me a second, I will be able to tell you, because I've told a lot of people the same thing, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, what bothers me, Mike, is it seems like there's actually been subtle pressure put on people just to do it without thinking about it.
It's not subtle. So I would say healthy people under 60, so a lot of us, they're at such low risk from this virus. If you didn't seek a flu vaccine, don't get a COVID vaccine, because if you're under 60 and in good health, you're at greater risk from flu than COVID. That's published information by one of the world's top epidemiologists, Dr. John Ioannidis. So if you're under 60 in good health, don't get the COVID vaccine. Also, I don't believe for a moment if you accept this vaccine, it will hasten the return of freedoms. So if you're doing it for that reason, a non-medical reason, I'm sorry. Just look at the number of times the government has moved the goalposts. Look into the eyes of Matthew Hancock. Do you believe what he says? And I don't. And so if you were thinking of getting it so you could go on holiday or go to the pub, what an absurd reason for taking an experimental gene-based vaccine against a disease that you are not at risk from. When I say it like that, you must realize it's just crackers. And that these people have reasons other than your health that's inspiring them to try and persuade you. Now, I don't know what they are exactly, but they are not good for you. So if you're healthy and under 60, don't do it. You won't get your freedoms back. And I would say that there are some countries that have already said we don't need vaccine certificates. I don't know which countries they are. They change from day to day. But I would say feed that hand. You know, if those people want to take you in without vaccine passport, do that. I do think certainly younger people, like my children in their 20s, they are not at measurable risk from this virus at all. Not at all. And therefore, even if you had years of experience with these vaccines, it would just be just like bad economics. But this way, it's bad risk benefit, because you don't quite know what the safety is. But the safety is not complete. Every medical intervention, whether a tablet, injection, they always come with some measure of risk. So if you're 25 and in perfect health, you're not at measurable risk. You simply can't find anyone of that description who's died. You had to be seriously ill beforehand. So why in the world would you take an experimental medical treatment that's almost 2 years from completing its clinical trials? This wasn't an alleged emergency. This material would be 2 years away from even contemplating giving it to you. And then, as I said to you earlier, Tony, why are the medical professionals silent? What I've just described, they would never have done this 3 years ago. It wouldn't take an experimental medicine and give it to people who are not at risk from the virus it's meant to immunize you against. They would say, this is a stupid thing to do. So why are they not saying that?
And what about people who've actually had COVID?
That's just stupid then. You know, everybody, definitely, this is a field I know a lot about. If you have recovered from this respiratory virus, because I've looked at pretty much all the good quality published literature, you are now immune. And the reason you are is the fact you're still alive. This virus will multiply pretty well in your body. So if you've caught it, it starts to multiply. Most people who are not ill or very old, you will mount an immune response to it. And within days to a couple of weeks at most, you will have overwhelmed it 99.9% of the time. And it leaves you with both antibodies and what are called T cells, which remember the encounter and will protect you against it if you see it again or one of its close brothers. So I personally think it's actually slightly dangerous to get vaccinated if you've had COVID. I've heard of, and we haven't yet seen the results, but we've heard of antibody-dependent enhancement. I'm not claiming that is definitely a big risk, but some people believe it's a very big risk. And what it says is if you've had the disease before and you've already got your body primed against it, the fear is that if you have a vaccine, that might actually bring about a worse outcome for you than if you were completely naive. So I think since you don't need it, you don't need to be protected by a vaccine if you've survived already, your immunity has coped with it, and there is this theoretical risk of antibody-dependent enhancement. And as I've said previously, it's an experimental medicine. Maybe you'll be unlucky and get a blood clot and die. Mm. So if you've had COVID, don't get vaccinated.
Another thing which has been circulating, actually, almost since the start, is this whole idea that the common cold is, you can split it up into four main different types of virus. One of those is known in by various names, but one is beta coronavirus. Now, this is just an ordinary common cold. It's not SARS-CoV-2. Yeah. I remember reading this back in April last year in the Daily Mail. They were saying that if you've actually caught this type of common cold, that you're very unlikely to even suffer badly catching COVID-19. Now, that to me sounds a bit like the good old traditional Edward Jenner vaccine, where you get cowpox and then it's basically a naturally occurring virus that you're giving to people, which is going to give them some form of immunity. So I just wonder, why have we not, if we're talking about vaccines, we're talking about cowpox and smallpox and Edward Jenner, why aren't we talking about the common cold coronavirus?
I know, it's just bizarre. It is right that, yes, SARS-CoV-2 is a coronavirus. So was SARS in 2003. And then there was Middle East respiratory syndrome, MERS, in 2012. They're all coronaviruses. But you're right, we've encountered them before. There are four so-called common cold-causing coronaviruses. OC43 is one of them, HKU1, I can't remember all the names. But yeah, there are four of them. They're not very similar to SARS-CoV-2, but they do have the fundamental structure. You have a ball and sticks. You know, they produce crowns on electron microscopy. They're same family, and they do share some proteins in common. And the effect, the reason and the importance of that is, as you say, if you've been infected by common cold coronaviruses, you've probably got some memory T cells, some antibodies that will bind to parts of SARS-CoV-2 and that will mitigate your risk of severe disease. And that's really what I was saying earlier, Tony, that lots of published work has said that about a third of us, 30, 40% of us, already had prior immunity. And that was probably the reason. It's not certain, but that's a plausible and supported explanation for that.
Now, I know the government, Matt Hancock, was saying that there was no immunity, none at all.
Wrong. See, it's just wrong. And also, look, the man's not a scientist, so I don't blame him for being wrong on things like that. Someone probably, you know, who hopefully a civil servant who had a degree wrote that down for him. We shouldn't assume Matthew Hancock knows this. So I don't want to be gentle on him, but equally, it's just not fair to say, you know, he kind of wantonly misled us. The man doesn't know anything about biology. So when he tells us about false positive rates of PCR tests, he's no idea. Someone like that shouldn't be anywhere near decision-making where it comes to people's health. Because everything he says, someone else has put on a piece of paper for him.
And yeah, he just reads this stuff out. In a way, he's almost like a newsreader or something. Exactly. He's just reading an auto cue.
And if someone hasn't told him, you should be even more frightened because he's not got an A-level in it, let alone a degree. So, that's some of the things you just prompted me to think about. Quite astonishing, really, in a short period of a year, some really enterprising physicians in lots of countries, including America and France and so on, they've come up with about 5 or 6 really good treatments for COVID-19, the disease caused by SARS-CoV-2. So there was a lot of political fighting about, I think it's called hydroxychloroquinone. Then there's ivermectin, which is a very old drug, off-patent drug that was originally developed to treat, believe it or not, parasitic diseases. And that's turned out to have a really strong effect, beneficial effect on people with this disease. There's inhaled steroids called budesonide, used often to treat people with asthma. There's dexamethasone, which is an injected steroid, again used for to treat diseases of inflammation. Vitamin D, we discovered that if you just give people really high dose vitamin D, as if they lived in the best possible climate and diet. So all of these things are really, really good, sort of between like 70 and 90% reductions in illness and death. And I'm sure you remember, don't you, all those campaigns on the radio and the government telling you about that? No, they didn't. And that's one of the things the listeners should know. Your government did absolutely nothing to tell you about the proceeds of this research that was going on all around the world, which could have saved, I think, probably, I don't know, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of lives. They did absolutely nothing. I mean, at best, it's appalling. And at worst, it's why are they hiding that from you?
That's a big question, isn't it? I mean, we've spoken to the A&E doctor a few weeks ago down at Princess Royal Hospital in Guernsey, who's part of a group of doctors, a frontline COVID care professionals, who are recommending ivermectin. Now, he wrote to Jeremy Farrar at Sage back in October, November last year, about ivermectin, saying, well, hang on, you know, this was a bog standard cure that was discovered for the SARS-CoV-1. We have also looked at these various studies and sent copies of these to Jeremy Farrar, explaining that there was up to even 80% against the control group with people surviving after being given ivermectin at an early stage in SARS-CoV-2. And he hasn't even received a reply.
No, it's I certainly early on in the whole event, in the sort of late spring, I thought it must just be a mistake. You know, I'm far too gentle, and I thought, well, there's just a lot of mistakes going on. You know, but as the year wore on, and for example, peer reviewed journal articles came out that showed lockdown didn't do anything, I was just shocked then when we did it again. Even though if you were interested in this field, you'd literally fall over journal articles explaining, comparisons of nations and cities and states and so on that had locked down or locked down hard compared with those that done gentle measures or nothing at all. And it was absolutely clear that there were no benefits at all to locking people down. Well, we know there are painful consequences. You destroy businesses, you destroy people's mental health, their physical health. I'm at the end of my tether. You know, I too have had a year of lockdown. And what's worse is I know what they're doing doesn't work. And I shall just explain if I could take it a moment, Tony. So we were told that, you know, it's a disease of human-to-human infectious contact. And therefore, if we can reduce the number of contacts, then we'll slow down the epidemic. And it kind of sounds reasonable. But it assumes that every person is pretty much at the same risk of infecting somebody else. And I know that that's not true. In order to infect someone, and all your listeners know it's not true, and I explain it, in order to be an infection risk to others, you have to have lungs full of virus and you have to have symptoms. The idea that we've got this so-called asymptomatic transmission is literally a fairy story. And the reason you know it's not true when I explain it to you is if you've got a lung full of virus, the virus is attacking you and you are fighting back. That produces symptoms. It's not possible to have a lung full of virus and no symptoms.
Hang on, because we keep being told about Typhoid Mary, who was going around infecting everyone with typhoid, even though she had no symptoms herself.
I've no idea whether it's relevant. I haven't read about the woman.
Okay, so that's one of the arguments that is put forward that some diseases.
Is it a good analogy? If it's not, then it's a poor analogy.
Okay.
But the point is, we've studied. So this has been studied. It was studied 10 million people. I'm not sure of the quality of the work, but 10 million people were studied in Wuhan a few months after the outbreak, and they found not a single contact of an asymptomatic case became PCR positive. So they tell us they were looking for them, but they didn't find any. And there were several other studies, and they found even in a household, if you looked at people who were PCR positive and had symptoms, I think they were about like one in four people would infect their spouse or a child or a relative. But if they had no symptoms, if they were asymptomatic, less than 1%. I would say that's probably within the false positive rate, the error rate of the test. So there's independent evidence, and it's also logically not true. So if some healthy person comes towards you, don't think they're going to give you this virus. It's not possible. They're lying. They're literally lying. The research is in. There's dozens of papers that show that people without symptoms are not an infectious health risk. So when you hear ministers and journalists repeating it, they are lying.
Now, I spoke to a plumber today, Mike, who, like me, says that he had a very nasty flu, is the way both of us describe it, back in December 2019, before COVID was supposed to exist, both of us in the southwest of England. I just wonder, I mean, we didn't know anything about it at that stage. And I wonder, is it possible that this was circulating in places other than Wuhan before it hit the news?
Yes, certainly. There's certainly numerous papers have appeared during last year in European cities where basically, as you'd expect, they sample and store, say, water supply. So they'll take from the mains water and the sewage water probably every day or every week. I don't know. It's not mine, but my job. But if it was, I bet they'll take a litre and then freeze it in little bottles, you know. And then if they need to do some tests, they can go back and thaw something. And I know several Italian cities, ladies had some ideas of, let's go back and have a look. And they went back and they found in something like September, October, November, in several Italian cities, in the wastewater, they were able to find, at least using this PCR test, signs that the virus had been present. So I do think it's possible that it was present. And it's funny, something rings a bell about the Southwest, because I think the Southwest did not have a sharp increase in mortality in the spring of 2020. But again, I think they had a worse winter than the rest of the UK. So the answer is yes. I'm not convinced that its first identification in Wuhan was the place, the only place on the earth where it had arisen. It could have arisen somewhere else. Why not? Just a virus.
Yeah, I think you have to just look at the stated, symptoms. And if you had them, I mean, you can't assume you've had it, but it's certainly likely. Anyway, these vaccine passports is all the talk seems to be about at the moment. And as you've said, it might be that there are certain countries that don't demand them that do very, very nicely in the coming months, from saying we are not going to require a vaccine passport. Say, for example, I don't know, in Monaco. And Monaco finds that it's got thousands and thousands of people coming on holiday.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. But I just want to point out that the absurdity of it, it's very evil, by the way. I'm convinced that this is all about control in the end. This is not an accident. I mean, it's just this is the most absurd thing you've ever heard. Let me just say again, if you need a vaccine passport, say, to cross a border or get into a pub, well, that means you're going to have to vaccinate every person. But you know that it's only the people like above 70 or people with chronic ill health. They're the only people who would really badly suffer. Why the hell would you be even contemplating vaccinating the other 75% of your population with something that might cause a, could cause a hazard. Some of them will die. You know, the consequence of your decision to introduce vaccine passports will be effectively to coerce people who don't need it, don't want it, and might die from it to take this. So you can see how unethical it is. It's also against what's called the Nuremberg Code, which was a set of laws put together after the Second World War, recognizing that Nazi doctors performed horrible medical experiments on people without their, obviously without their consent. And we decided that we would make sure this could never happen again. We put into law, and it's still present, that a person may not be coerced or mandated into accepting any medical procedure against their will. Well, I would say vaccine passports to be able to access your own life. Don't kid yourself. It'll be borders today, pubs tomorrow, supermarkets the day after, and then you won't be able to leave your house. Because the same argument, it's the same argument. And it's the wrong argument, by the way, so I'll just finish off. It's the same argument, which is, well, you know, you might feel able to take a risk, but you know, we can't let you take a risk of other people's health. Well, it's just bullshit. Most people in the community are at greater risk from flu than COVID. We don't do anything. We don't make people take vaccines. We don't make them certify themselves. So it doesn't even stand up in its own logic. But secondly, back to my point, you're not an infectious health hazard to other people unless you're symptomatic. And if you are, you could have one of about 40 different respiratory viruses. Is it only COVID that it's illegal to give people? How about the other 39? And then finally, we've provided, if not already, then very soon, an opportunity for everybody who is at risk from the virus or has managed to be persuaded that they are, you know, by unethical physicians and doctors and nurses. And so basically everybody wants it's been protected. No one else needs protecting. No one else needs protecting. Why would you need a vaccine passport? Every person who's a fearful person is protected. So you don't need a certificate. It's just literally absurd. I've listened to 3 hours of parliamentary debate on the European Parliament and a select committee in Westminster. Not a single person actually put up an argument that makes any sense. Have you got one, Tony? I don't know what the reason is.
Well, I don't. But we are being told, Mike, that the lockdowns will be ending soon.
I don't believe it. I don't think, in fact, I've made a note. My first bullet at the top is, this is not going away. I don't think we're ever going to return to normal because it's not a natural phenomenon anymore. Let's accept that this is a real virus and that it swept through, reaching a, you know, tumult in the spring of last year. Let's accept that. But what's happening now? The number of weekly deaths in the UK is lower than normal. It's lower than the five-year average. The number of people alleged to be dying with or of COVID is, I think it was 17 the last time I checked, at least one of the days it was 17. Do people know that 1,700 people die every day? So I'm not even sure if it was, I don't think it was like 1% of the actual deaths were attributed to COVID, and they won't all be right. Some of them probably did die of it. But at this point, I would say, because the testing system is not accurate, it overestimates in all cases, so-called false positives and so on. So it's less than 1% of the people who died last week died of COVID, and yet you're still locked down. And as I say, 1.9 million tests of school children over the last few weeks, no cases. So I don't believe there's any COVID in the community anymore. And so even if there was a little bit, we've vaccinated almost everybody and just about everybody who's vulnerable. Have you ever thought of a government? If you were asking the question, would a government still keep you locked down, destroying the economy and people's freedoms, if what I've just described is true? And yet you know it is. They have vaccinated almost every vulnerable person, and yet we're not supposed to be properly freed up till June. It's literally mad, isn't it? It's not going away, folks. Won't go away until you stand up and you don't even need to take a position. You can just say, I'm not putting up with this nonsense anymore. That's what I advise you to do. Don't wear a mask. Do what you like. You must do it. If you don't do it, you are going to be crushed. Don't listen to this in 6 months' time and think, oh, I wish I'd responded during the summer. And all the evidence is they tighten the conditions and move the goalposts and invent new fears. So telling you about the variants, as an immunologist, this is one that makes me both angry and frightened. Angry because they're lying to you, frightened because of the fact that they are. So I'll just finish off by saying that the borders, our borders have never been closed, even in wartime. And they're effectively closed. You can't leave the country without a good reason, unless it's A, B, and C. And the reason given is, well, these variants. I can assure you the variants are so similar to the original, and it's been tested in looking at people's T cells, that anyone who's been vaccinated or survived infection will not for a moment think one of these variants is different. But that's what the government's telling you. Don't you find that terrifying? Oh, and furthermore, the pharmaceutical industry is busy making top-up vaccines to make sure you're immune against these variants, which are not needed. And the world's health regulators, like the FDA and our MHRA, are saying they're so similar, these top-up vaccines, to the originals, we don't need any safety testing. So basically, on a say-so, which I'm telling you as an experienced immunologist is a lie, someone's going to make a genetic sequence and inject it into you. And you know what? Once you've become vaccinated and got a vaccine passport, you're not going to have a choice, are you? Happy about this? And also, why would I be lying about this? I've done 32 years in the pharmaceutical industry. I was a vice president. I ran my own biotech. I'm comfortably off. Why would I be doing this? People, former colleagues think I'm mad. They honestly, I've lost lots of friends over this. I'm doing this because you're being lied to. And I don't know why, but it's not bloody good, is it? So wake up while you've got time.
And is there anywhere you'd recommend people go to actually get some decent information? Because, I mean, I can tell you as a journalist, what I'm seeing is basically advertising from the pharmaceutical industry, from their policies, is being put onto news bulletins. It's basically like the pharmaceutical lobby is writing our news bulletins in the same way. In the run-up to the Iraq war, the arms lobby was writing the news bulletins then about weapons of mass destruction and this sort of thing. Absolutely. So where can we go, Mike, to find...
There are no mainstream media around. I'll give a shout-out to my former friends. Well, no, I still love them at talk radio, but unfortunately I've gradually become... they would probably think I've become extreme in my statements, but that's because I'm frightened and I think we're running out of time. I'm the same person, folks, anybody who's ever heard of Dr. Mike Yeadon, worked with me at Wellcome or at Pfizer or Ziarko. I'm the same person. I'm getting crosser and more frightened because this is making less and less sense. So there are no mainstream outlets because, believe it or not, there's an official policy of censorship. It's called the Ofcom Coronavirus Broadcasting Guidelines, which you haven't heard of, folks. You can go and look them up on Ofcom's website. By sheer coincidence, they were bought in on March 23rd last year, the day of lockdown. And essentially it says, this is an emergency. All broadcasters and newsprint will not print anything that conflicts with the government's advice or its advisors' advice.
How about just one website?
Probably UK Medical Freedoms Alliance, I like.